This podcast is brought to you with thanks to Aspire Planning Group, creating a better financial future for you and your family.
Clubland with Chris Appleford, Morris Bassetto and Tim Payton on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome to the Clubland program here on FNR Football Nation Radio. Big show for you today. We've got to get to our special guest in just a moment, right off the top of the show. After the first break, we're going to talk to Jason Charles from Football Federation Victoria. He's the participation manager down there. We're going to talk to him about club ambassadors and what they can do for your club. And I'm sure all of our Victorian clubs and even our clubs right around Australia will want to know what their respective Football Federation's club ambassadors can do for them. And then in the third segment, we're going to have a little panel discussion, as we always do, and we're going to talk about the benefits of kids playing football, and not just so they get better at playing football, but the other sort of other benefits that you get from playing
if there are any in a
competitive team environment, being a part of a club. But first, our special guest off the top of the program, he played for Sydney United and Manchester United in youth football. In senior football, Sydney United, Manchester United, Aston Villa, Chelsea, the Central Coast Mariners, Sydney Olympic, and he played 17 times for the Socceroos. Of course, I'm talking about the great goalkeeper himself, Mark Bosnich. Bozza, welcome to the program.
Good evening, boys. How are you?
We're good, thanks. Chris Appleford here, Morris Bassetto and Tim Payton in the studio. Tell us about what junior club did you play for and what was it like?
Well, there's one club you missed out. Two, actually. The first club I played for was a local club called Hayduk. And then after that, then it was Marconi.
Yep.
Then it was Sydney Croatia or Sydney United, as you call it now. So yep. For me, it was fantastic. At Hayduk, I used to play a bit of outfield, but then I wasn't good enough, so I went all the way back to goal. And then I was very, very fortunate at Marconi and Sydney Croatia to have a goalkeeper training, Ron Corrie, who was unbelievable. He's the best goalkeeping coach that I've had anywhere in the world, and completely ahead of his time. And he really taught me everything and allowed me to train with the first team. So that was a wonderful experience. And you know, it gave me such an advantage, especially, you know, going over to England. And, you know, I'd already been, you know, like I said, training with first team players. So, of course, that really did help you.
Bozza, Tim Payton here, mate. Welcome to the show.
Timmy,
mate, where did it all start for you? Was it a family influence? Was it a friend? Was it just kicking the ball around the primary school?
If I'm brutally honest, I would have, you know, if I was allowed to play what I want to play, I would have played rugby league because I was suited to it. I was fast. I was better with my hands. Played cricket in the summer, but it was my mum, really, who turned around and said, there's no way you're playing rugby league. so that was that. And then, you know, like I said to you, I'll try it with the soccer thing, but I had pace, a lot of pace. I could do it 100 metres in just over 11 seconds. That was fine. But in terms of the skill, no way. But I was always good with my hands. So like I said, I went back down and found my little niche in goal.
Mark, Morris Bassetto here again. Welcome to the show. We love talking to pros and superstars of the game about their early formative years. You mentioned earlier you started as a player and then moved to goalkeeping. How old were you when you decided goalkeeping is what you wanted to do? Maybe what was the trigger for that? And then when did you actually realise that you could actually make a career out of being a goalkeeper?
Well, when was the trigger for that? Like I said, I was probably around about 10 or 11. And like I said, I was okay outfield, but I was nothing spectacular. But when I went into goal, I was good at it. And then basically, like I said, as soon as I met Ron Corrie at 12 years of age, and then he took me at 12 years of age up to Marconi after the first team. And then I remember taking shots from first team players at 12 and doing well. So then I thought, I can do this. And then, of course, in terms of playing over in England, like a lot of people, watching Craig Johnson lift the FA Cup in 85-86 to complete the double and scoring at Wembley for Liverpool, I was like, I want to do that. So I was very, very fortunate to be able to do that.
It's amazing the amount of kids that reference Craig Johnson from your era, Bozza, yeah, as their influence. What influence did he have back in those days of being a bit of a role model for the kids, much like the golden generation of 2006 had?
Yeah, well, he was playing for, you could say, arguably one of the best, not arguably, one of the best teams in the world, arguably the best team in the world, had been so for like 20 years in Liverpool. And watching Match of the Day on ABC and watching the European ties on SBS early in the morning, just You know, I think that was the inspiration. Like I said, just watching him at Wembley on that late Saturday night, that time in May, you know, watching him lift the European Cup, you know, against Roma in Rome, you know, back in 84, this can be done. So I think that's really the type of role that he played. In terms of the Golden Generation of 2006, a similar thing would have occurred in terms of Australia, because it's been so long since we've been to a World Cup. So probably a lot of young players would have looked at that and said, look, you know, Australia can do it. You know, they can get to the finals and make the knockout rounds.
Bozza, we talk a lot about the show. Obviously, it's clubland and grassroots football. And yeah. We quickly work out that, you know, the key to most successful clubs are really the parents and the volunteers, but also an important part is the coaches. And you've mentioned in your career, you know, Ron Corrie, and obviously as a professional, you've played under the best, you know, including, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson. Have you ever shifted your mind or had a go at coaching yourself, and where is that in sort of your space at the moment?
Yeah, no, not really. You know, a lot of people, including my father, said, you know, why don't you go do your license? And I said, but look, it's very, very difficult when you've played under the very best and you've kept diaries and you've watched them close hand and you sort of know exactly what goes on, to sort of, you know, to get around, to get your head around the fact that you have to go pay 20 grand then to take a license from somebody you've never heard of.
Yeah.
Maybe one day for me, but in terms of actually being a manager or a coach, no, I'll always help out somebody if they really want a one-on-one session or some advice, but I think I can just share so much more by being in the media from my experiences to help people. I think that's a much more valuable medium because it goes to so many more people, and I'd hate to be in the situation as well. Just say, for example, I had the Mark Bosnich camp and kids were coming with certain expectations, and just say there was 1,000 of them, I wouldn't be able to give them all the attention that I could give them by being on TV or talking here on radio. They can hear this is real, you know, they can see it. So I think that's the best way for me. You know, like I said to you, but if somebody turned around and said, look, I really need a session, or could you take a look at me, and I'll always do my best to help them. But in terms of doing it like that, and then when you're talking about, like I said, once you start taking people's money, you've got to give them exactly what they're paying for. Well, I can do that from TV because I can talk at, you know, in one place, like I will tonight on Bill and Boz, one place, one time, and it'll go out to the hundreds of thousands of homes.
Yeah.
I can give advice to one person at a soccer camp and this, that, and the other, but then I have, you know, there's another maybe 500 to 1,000 kids where I have to, you know, I mean, it's just nearly physically impossible.
Yeah.
Basically, I have to basically train other trainers and sort of tell them and teach them things, but it's a massive undertaking, and I really haven't got the time to do that.
A whole lot of Bozza coaches, that'd be pretty cool.
That's another worry.
Hey, Bozza, Mo just mentioned that, you know, the common theme about great clubs are the volunteers and the parents around the clubs and the committee people.
They're everything. I mean, me growing up, if it wasn't for the likes of my dad and people like that, you know, working all day from 6 in the morning till 5 at night and taking us to training and sometimes taking the sessions, there would still be football, but it wouldn't be football as we know it. I mean, it was all those, a lot of migrant parents who had come over, who gave their time and their effort for absolutely nothing, and helped produce a lot of good players, including the Golden Generation, and passed them on to sort of, you know, like I said, the people who could go at it. So, I mean, I know how important that is, and they're the lifeblood of any club, and are so important. And I just hope one day that the game gets to the point where those volunteers, even though they volunteer, they're still paid, because they just do an amazing job for every club.
Boz, what advice would you give an up-and-coming little Bozza or a little Johnny growing up in the western suburbs of Sydney? What advice would you give him forging a career in football these days? Or her, in football these days?
Well, look, play all sports when you can, because it helps with your athleticism. But when you're playing your main sport, whether that be whatever, if it's football, train very hard for 3 days a week, very, very hard, and practice a lot, and study a lot too, because that does help you. It helps you with your development and everything. And then if you get the opportunity, you go overseas as early as you possibly can.
Hey, Bozza, let's hypothetically, you're in charge of a club. You've got a blank sheet of canvas. What's the first thing you do to set up a club in out in clubland?
What do you mean, a football club from an administrative point of view or from a footballing point of view?
From scratch.
From scratch, what's the most important thing you want to get right about that club?
Well, first and foremost, it would be facilities. So if you're saying hypothetically, I would have a look at what ground we're at and try to work out approximately how many people we're going to get. And always look to, if those facilities are rented, for example, then you're going to have to look, okay, well, we're going to have to get a certain amount of people. So then I would structure it in terms of the team being good enough to get that many type of people. But eventually, I want my own ground, and then from there, that's where you play to the training facilities as well. Okay, you might not be able to afford to go into state-of-the-art training facilities, but what you've got to work with. You've got to make that as comfortable as possible, because that's where the hard work goes into. That's where that's where you water the tomatoes, so to speak, and to make sure they're as best as they possibly can be, and also put together, like I said, let's have an aim of about 5 years to move into something absolutely fantastic, because training facilities are so important. Then you talk about appointing a manager, somebody that's young, that's hungry, and it understands where we are financially from the club's point of view. And then you look at, like I said, you look at other things. So you've got the manager of the football team. He'll have a secretary and assistant that he can rely on 100%, and so will I, that will be at the club 24/7. Other things, other things that people don't realise, getting a kit man or a kit lady, whatever you want, making sure that the players have a nice hot meal, ready for them straight after training. All those things are vital ingredients to make sure that the club starts on the right note, and then you can improve all those things, and you improve them step by step according to the resources that you have.
Fantastic, Bozza. Sounds like that's a template for any club looking to, in terms of A-League expansion.
Trust me, guys. It's not rocket science. A lot of people try to make out that it's not rocket science. A lot of people try to make out that it is rocket science. I don't know why they do that, but sometimes I feel like just shake them. So, look, listen, don't try to make it sound more difficult than it is. It's not. It's a very simple game, and things are done right. The most important thing is that you got people in the right positions that are doing things right, and you pay them well, and you make sure they do things right. And if they don't, they're out. It's simple as that. It really, you get things right on the pitch, and everything else will flow. It really will. And that goes in terms of the crowd, in terms of your merchandise, everything. What you do on that pitch, whether it be on a Saturday or on a Wednesday night, that dictates to how basically the club will be perceived, how people individually at the club are seen. It's just, like I said to you, it's been forever. That's exactly... I remember speaking to Kevin Sheedy, who used to be the coach of Essendon and was the coach of GWS. And me and him had a bit of an argument because he had said something in terms of GWS, their crowds not being a lot. And he said something in reference to Western Sydney Wanderers, saying that the immigration minister, I think, was their recruiting officer. And I had to go at him. I said, look, there's no need to say that. And he goes, well, what's the secret then? I said, well, you should know the secret. You've been around sport a long time. We've got a winning team. At that time, GWS Giants were getting beat by 140 points. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what? And people, I know you guys, yeah, we'll have a winning team in 4 or 5 years. So that may be so. I said, but right now, the Western Sydney Wanderers, and they did. I mean, they're winning. The first game of that first season against Central Coast Mariners, they had 8,000 people. By the end of it was chockers. They got 18,000 members now. 3 years after inauguration, they went and won the Asian Champions League.
Yeah.
And that is key. That is everything. I don't care what anyone says. That is, like I said, from that, you can build all around. But that is the key. That's the centre of the octopus, if you like, to hold everything together.
Bozza, we could talk for a long time, but I know you've got to go and do your show. Thank you so much for joining our Clubland program. I really appreciate you giving us your time.
No problem. Anytime, champion.
Mark Bosnich there, of course, a superb goalkeeper for the Socceroos and also Manchester United, Chelsea, Aston Villa, where he really made his name over there, overseas. Fantastic stuff. Could talk to him for a long time.
Yeah. He's infectious. Pretty easy to listen to, Bozza, isn't he?
Absolutely. No, he's fantastic. Little side story. Yeah. I worked and lived in London for 3 years, and I landed in London to commence that journey in it was like the 2nd of December 1993, and the next day was a Saturday, and I went down to Loftus Road, and it was QPR Aston Villa,
yep.
And the great man was in goal for Villa that day. Absolutely, I didn't even have a coat. I've absolutely froze my nuts off, but with my wife, by the way, yep. And she thoroughly enjoyed the game, and he was fantastic.
Great goalkeeper, great goalkeeper. We're going to take a break, boys. After the break, we're going to chat to a man who's the FFV Participation Manager, Jason Charles. We're going to have a chat to him about club ambassadors. This is Clubland on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Clubland with Chris Appleford, Morris Bassetto and Tim Payton on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back to Clubland here on FNR. Chris Appleford with you. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at FNR underscore radio. You can follow me at Chris Appleford. You can follow Morris Bassetto at M Bassetto, 1S2Ts.
Correct.
You can follow Tim Payton at TP Splinter.
The infamous.
You know, you haven't been here for so long. But
I know. I feel like he's a special guest.
You're like,
and special guest Tim Payton.
I'm looking at you, Morris, and then there's this movement out of the corner of my eye, and there's actually somebody over there. It's crazy.
Well, it's probably about time we brought a bit of personality back to the show, so it's good. We've got to get back.
The high rating,
yeah.
But modest.
Personality, if you like, wood.
Well, you've basically, over the past 5 or 6 weeks, run out. You've used all of your excuses.
And I'm back now. That's it.
I'm done. You're in. Great. And we've got a special guest on the phone right now. He is the Participation Manager at the Football Federation Victoria. Jason Charles, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. How you going?
We're going well, mate. Chris Appleford here, Morris Bassetto and Tim Payton also in the studio. Football Federation Victoria Club Development Officer, now known as Club Ambassadors. What brought about the change?
I guess we were looking at a way of describing what the role really entails today. The Federation, through the board's direction, have a real obsession with clubs, and we want to make sure that the role of the team we have out and about is genuinely reflective of that. So traditionally, if you said to somebody that you're a development officer, they think it's all around going out and doing school clinics and developing teams and doing coach development and stuff. But these roles are far greater than that. They're really about being with our clubs and making them a better place and being the best they can be.
So what do they do? What does a club ambassador do? What does a typical day look like for them?
What are your KPIs?
So they have three key components to their role. The first and most important is rolling out our club engagement program, which we spent a lot of time developing at the end of last year. And that program is around building great, authentic, sustainable clubs. It's a bit of an acid test, some metrics around all the elements that make a great club. And out of that, we develop an action plan and give the clubs all the resources they need to be great. The other component is developing relationships between club and council. So, you know, making sure that when those facilities questions get asked, the club and the council have a good relationship and we're able to move ahead as positively as possible. And the third part is just being out there building relationships. So their role is two or three nights a week, they'll be out at clubs, they'll be delivering the engagement programs, but other times might just be having a coffee with the club secretary, might be just catching up with a local council person, going to events, talking to clubs about grants that are available that they can apply for and assisting them with that. So really taking the FFE office to the clubs instead of how we've done it traditionally and expected the clubs to come into us.
Jason, Morris Bassetto here. Welcome to the show, and incredibly exciting initiative that the FFE has put forward. How will you measure success?
Look, I think part of that will be your typical metrics around, you know, customer satisfaction surveys and the response from club presidents and club secretaries. Part of it will be in the engagement from clubs back to us. Will give us a real indication, those clubs that are genuinely proactively seeking us out to get help and get assistance that they need. But also the engagement program gives us an actual score base. So as I said, there's a range of metrics, and it covers everything about a great club. So it talks about, you know, governance, it talks about female involvement and gender balance and inclusion and diversity and facility plans and club relationships and player growth and mini roos programs and child safe environments, all of those metrics that are really critical to a club regardless of how they perform on the field. And the clubs get a score out of a percentage score on the basis of that. So we'll be able to review that on an ongoing basis and see the improvement in clubs through a one star through to a five star club as an actual measure of their success.
And are the clubs given the criteria and the weighting of assessment across the various criteria before you go in? Before you go in, so they know how you're assessing them?
They can. We do have a self-assessment version, so the club can receive that in the first instance if they wish. But we have we've got 7 club ambassadors at the moment, 3 metro, 4 regional. We've just engaged our 4th metro, and we're just about to advertise for another 2 regional in Bendigo and Ballarat. So as part of the relationship building, the team are out there talking to clubs. So if the club wanted in the first instance, absolutely we'll send them the criteria to have a look at. But otherwise, it's a matter of meeting the club, sitting down and talking to them at a time that's convenient to them, which is really obviously critical in making this successful, and going through what works for the club. This is all about the club. So what works for them, we will adapt to make sure it works for them.
And how have you found the club engagement? Have they welcomed the ambassadors in and are willing to sort of open up in terms of all aspects of the club operations?
Yeah, look, I think it's one of the most exciting things that I've seen in my time in the game. I've been involved at the various levels for many, many years. The clubs love it. They're reaching out. The feedback we've got, we've received back from clubs about, it's light bulb moments for them. It's things that they've never thought of. But I think what's most critical is the messaging that the team deliver when they go and sit with the club, and that is, it's not an audit. It's not. There's no punishment. There's no negativity. This is all about saying, hey guys, you're doing all these things really well. To be great, these are some other things you could do as well. And the most critical element is, we don't just leave it at that. We give them links and resources and an action plan, and then we come back and revisit it with them. So the response from clubs has been absolutely fantastic.
Look, that's great, and we have a lot of club administrators that listen to the show. Obviously, Clubland, that's what we spend a lot of time talking about. For those guys listening and gals listening, is there any common themes or a common theme that's coming through the program that you might want to talk about?
In terms of where clubs are struggling, I think, you know, we know that facilities is a major challenge, and a part of that is relationships with councils. I think gender balance is a really important one, and the inclusion of females, not just on the field, but in terms of club committees and boards, in terms of coaches, in terms of support for females across the whole area of the game, is an area that we've noticed there are deficiencies out in clubs. The other thing that will be exciting with this, as we get more and more scores come through and we can really highlight those areas where clubs are challenged, is we'll develop some support programs around those. So we'll do workshops and deliver additional programs to clubs to help them address any of those things.
Yeah, that's great. And when you talk about deficiencies in certain areas, what are the benchmarks that you use in terms of measuring where clubs are at in certain areas? And when you say deficiency, what's the benchmark that you're measuring that against?
We don't have a benchmark as such. The way the program's been written, it's really objective. So it's not are you doing this a bit, a little bit, a lot, or really well. It's a straight sort of yes no with the criteria. So it really highlights immediately if they're doing it or they're not doing it. So the benchmark most importantly to me is it's benchmarking themselves against their best self. So the strength of the program is we can sit down with a club who's at the top of the NPL, and we can sit down with a club who might have two senior teams and a mini-roos team in regional Victoria, and we can use exactly the same criteria to judge them. So it's not benchmarked against based on who you are or what level you're participating at. It's benchmarked against your best version of yourself, and I think that's a really important component of the program.
Jason, what do you find that the difference, as you just mentioned there, between the top of the NPL and Manangatang, you know, senior team, what are the differences in what they're crying out for in terms of support from the FFE and their ambassador?
A lot of them are the same issues. We know facilities constantly comes up. Juniors, making the clubs more female friendly, growing girls' participation, change rooms, lights. A lot of those things are consistent no matter what level the clubs are at. I would say some of the NPL clubs, based on the fact that they've got probably a more strict participation licence, are probably stronger on some of the club governance and planning stuff. But other than that, it's fair to say there's some of our community clubs out there are absolutely leading the space in terms of the quality of the administration being delivered at Clubland in terms of the processes and procedures they have in place. So there's consistencies and inconsistencies, but there's nothing standing out just yet. We've only done about 60 of the clubs out of the 360, so we're still a little way away from being able to really benchmark the results against a statewide picture.
Hey Jason, how can clubs take advantage of club ambassadors?
So if they haven't been contacted as yet, they can certainly jump on the FFE website. So there's a banner there that has a picture of our branded cars and with the out and about slogan. Click on that; it'll take them through, and they can make direct contact with their ambassador. I would urge every club to make contact and start to build the relationship, because the biggest advantage of these guys is they're out and about with the club. So whilst the various departments within the office are typically extremely busy, these guys are your conduit to all of those departments. And if there's something you need, they have the contacts, they have the ear of the other departments, and we'll make it happen to suit, to fit what the club needs. So it's an absolute commitment to we'll do whatever it takes to make our clubs better.
Jason, thanks so much for being a part of the Clubland program tonight. Really appreciate you coming on, giving us your time and explaining the Club Ambassador program there from the FFE. Thanks for coming on.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Jason Charles there, the Participation Manager of Football Federation Victoria. Mo, you're the president of a Victorian football club. Is it interesting to you? Is a club ambassador of interest to you come out and help your club?
Oh, very much so. I think it's a great program. I think some clubs will benefit more than others. I can't wait for the club ambassador to come out the mall and say, your ground's rubbish and your facilities are shit. So that's going to be great. And we only have two girl teams and blah, blah, blah. I'd be surprised if there are any clubs out there, including, no disrespect to Manangatang, I think you mentioned.
Yeah, Manangatang, yeah.
But I think most clubs are self-aware enough to understand where they are and where they need to improve and where they can do better.
Yep.
What's exciting, I think, about the program potentially is a lot of clubs don't know maybe where to go and how to start.
Yeah, how to make
to
the
improve.
Change. Yeah,
where they know, you know, they know their facility's not good, their ground's not good, or they're changing. They know they don't have any girls teams, and they'd love to, right? Because
how do they fix
one's
it?
Hand in hand. You know, you got the girls teams, and that gives you fantastic kudos with councils and governments and all of the, you know, the state budget that comes down and the commitment to girls' sport and women's sport. That's great.
Yep.
But some clubs, I think, don't know maybe where to start, and then they might talk about it, and then it sometimes seems a bit of a mountain to climb. And you know, if anyone's spent any time lobbying government and council or state government, federal government and local councils, it is a big mountain. You know, you sometimes
lengthy
you
process.
Do. Yeah, you feel like a Sherpa. You know, you're up there carrying bags trying to get to the
trying to get to the summit,
trying to get to you know, Everest. It's hard, you know, even getting a base camp. And I think where these guys and the team at the FFE can really help, and all state federations across all clubs, is to give them a little bit of guidance, give them a bit of a kickstart. Here's what you need to do. Do you need help? We've got contacts.
Yeah.
You know, someone says, oh, you know, I remember, I think it was last year or the year before, we had Nana Wadding play down at our ground, and Tim Dacre says, you know what? You know, I think you should have a word to council. And that's great advice, but you might not know who at council, what department. And these guys, they've got the contacts. They can help direct and give you a little roadmap to success. And that's I think, a great initiative.
Well, the other thing also is those guys will be able to share a lot of other clubs' IP. And at that level, that's what it's all about, bouncing off other clubs, trying to get what they're doing well and maybe sort of bring that into your club as well.
Well, hopefully they're not sharing IP, otherwise it wouldn't be IP, Tim. Right, if every club's got it, all of a sudden it's no longer your intellectual property.
Well, you still can share your IP.
Well, you can sort of share certain bits. You wouldn't want to share all your IP.
Well, you're going to keep some up your sleeve, but it's good stuff.
It's a competitive landscape, isn't it?
We're sharing IP.
No, of course we do, but
for the benefit of our listeners,
not the real good stuff,
not your good stuff. Hey, boys, we're going to take a break now. After the break, we're going to have a little chat about the benefits the kids get from playing team sports, in our case, football, and not just playing football. There are other benefits the kids get from being a part of a football club. We're going to talk about that right after this.
Clubland with Chris Appleford, Maurice Bassetto and Tim Payton on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back to the Clubland program here on FNR, Football Nation Radio. Great chat so far today. Jason Charles, before the break, the FFV Participation Manager, talking about the new Club Ambassadors program. If you are a football club out there in Victoria or around Australia, I'm sure there are similar programs with your own football federations. Make sure you get in touch. Make sure you get the Club Ambassadors or the Development Officers or whatever they're called in your state to come out to your club and help you to improve where you need improvements done. They are there to help. Make sure you take advantage of them.
Could we fly Maurice Bassetto around the country and go and give some tips to any clubs wanting some help out there?
How do you reckon you'd go, mate?
I don't think I'd be that great, to be honest.
Well, you wouldn't want to share your IP, would you?
Yeah, of course. Hey?
I'm not sharing that. Not sharing that stuff.
Not the good stuff, anyway.
Yeah. And then, of course, off the top of the hour, we had Mark Bosnich on the program talking about his junior clubs, his junior playing days, what it means for him to be a goalkeeper and how he became a goalkeeper. Fascinating stuff. And he would have been a rugby league player had it been his choice. I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah, he's always spruiked that. Shame his mum wanted him to sit at home and go and play football instead of playing rugby league.
Well, I was a media manager of Melbourne Storm for 6 years, and I've often joked with my wife about, hey, let's get Jack into the rugby league program, you know, in Victoria, and nope, not playing rugby league.
Isn't it amazing?
Nah, the sport's brutal.
It's absolutely brutal.
Absolutely
is brutal. Yeah, absolutely is brutal. No doubt about it. But, you know, toughen them up.
Yep.
But we have a football program here. That's what we talk about. We love the game, no doubt about it. And I guess kids come along to – parents take kids to football clubs because they want their kids to join a team and become – get better, play sport for the health and fitness, all those sorts of things. But what are the, what's the most important reasons, or what are some other reasons why kids should become part of clubs, sporting clubs, and in our case, football clubs?
Yeah, look, I think for the next 15 minutes or so, we're probably going to tell a lot of our listeners how to suck eggs,
to be perfectly fair.
But, and before we even talk about, you know, playing sport obviously has a health and well-being component to it. You know, healthy kids, exercising, I think it's great for and we all know it has to be great for all kids. But one thing I'm a big proponent of, and it's not just about football, but football's a big part of that, is team sports versus individual sports. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, guys like Bernard Tomic and Nick Kyrgios could have done with a little bit of team sports growing up, to be fair.
Yep.
Look, they're probably a lot richer and a lot more famous playing individual sports, but I think team sports. And you see it a lot in the corporate world. I spend a lot of time in the corporate world given my sort of day job. And, you know, you can really see those people coming through that have played, have been part of team sports. They understand resilience, camaraderie, teamwork, adaptability. You know, there's so many. I could sort of reel off respecting authority. There's so many things that you kids can learn over and above just being fit and staying away from TV and video games, that's going to help them in later life.
Being a man that's employed many people in your corporate life, what kind of gravitas, when you're looking at a CV, does playing in team sports have?
Well, it's funny. If you want the the standard human resources answer, they will say... they will look at academic results first and foremost. So even these days of technology and innovation, the company I'm associated and other companies, this is not isolated to who I'm there, you know, they will have an online screening. I mean, you need to really meet 1,000 people, go out to campuses for you know, we try and get the best graduates coming out of university to join our firm. You know, do you need to go out there and do all that, or can you just online, you know, send us through something and we can screen it electronically, and we can go from 2,000 applicants to the best 20 in 30 seconds.
Yep.
Right? And that's what some organisations do. And then you end up with really good academic and people that are really smart and study really hard, right?
Yep.
But
there's more to it.
Way more to it. So then you have a little bit of a well-rounded thing. You might ask them to send in a video interview or something, like you're pitching to go on Survivor, or, you know, I'm a celebrity, get me out here or something. And then you see, and then you're trying to understand a little bit of the personality and what makes a person tick, and then you get them in for an interview, and then the interview, there's normally a set of preset questions that, you know, the interviewer is, it's mandatory that they have to ask the interviewee these questions, and you mark them against the questions, and it talks about, you know, tries to understand resilience. You know, when have you had difficult circumstances, when have you led a team, or when have you done this, or when have you done that, but really what it comes down to most of the time is, you know, have you played team? Did you play football for the school? Did you represent football or play baseball or basketball? Or show me some of the extracurricular stuff.
Yep.
And generally, not much gravitas, some gravitas in certain organisations, depending who's looking at it, but really just so important when you get out there, when you're talking to clients and talking to suppliers and working in teams, and you know, unless you're in a lab and you're trying to split the atom, or you're doing your stuff with the Bunsen burner and the pipette, or over here in a sort of we would call them propeller head roles, or really technical roles, You know, most people, these skills that you learn playing team sports are absolutely irreplaceable in the corporate world and any other social spectrum that people of today find themselves in.
Do you think our junior coaches place or understand the importance of their role in a young kid's life in giving them some of these skills?
Look, I think some do. I think coaches are like school teachers. You know, they're incredibly important in the formative years of any adolescent and child's early adult years. I saw a fantastic film clip that on Facebook that Thierry Henry talked about his years under Arsene Wenger.
Oh, yeah.
And how hard it is to be a coach.
Yeah.
You know, about the fact that no one actually cares about the coach.
Yeah.
And the coach has feelings. And he sort of reflected and he said, oh, you know, maybe, I think he didn't say it, but I think he was saying, I should have been a bit more cognizant of Arsene's feelings and all of the responsibilities that a coach has. And that's a great question. I think generally most coaches understand the importance and the role that they play in with the kids, but I don't think that's necessarily, in fact, I know it's not reciprocated with the kids and the kids' parents.
No, definitely. I mean, a gentleman walked out of this studio, it was on your show.
Ian Greener.
Ian Greener. He was heavily involved in young football development when I was a young player, and he knocked me back from the under-13 state team.
He was the head of football for VIS.
Which he was, you know, and I'll never, ever forget that. And, you know, it was a lengthy trial process and eventually broke in and further down the track. But I'll never, ever forget.
That were the days you could only have two on the bench.
That's right. So
if you could have had four, you would have
been on 100%. But it was amazing for years and years and years. I always associated that name, Ian Greener, with resilience and coming back the next year, trying a little bit harder. And it's probably to him it was so innocuous, and he probably can't even remember. I mean, he did remember me eventually, but to him it would have been nothing. But to a young kid, the impact that that has can sort of be defining in a way.
And I think. You know, what kids learn playing team sports as well and working with teammates, it's again in the corporate world. You know, I have people say to me, you know, I think I do a pretty good job, Morrison. You know, and I say, you know what? You're right. You actually do a fantastic job. I say, well, the guy next to me, he gets paid $2,000 more than me. All right. And it's all done in the best intentions, but is it about, you know, all right, I leave it with me, I'll reduce his pay by $2,000, not a problem. you know what I mean? And then they look at me and they go, well, I actually was wanting 2,000 more. I go, yeah, you reckon? but it's always going to that lowest common denominator a lot of the time. And that's where coaches and parents and kids are the same thing. I'll get an email as a president of the club and say, look, you know, young Johnny on the weekend got 3 minutes less than these four other kids. I think the coach is a prick.
Yeah.
Right? But the reality is the coach is just trying to teach a kid something, and it's something generally about effort and commitment and listening and adaptability and teamwork and
sometimes
all
it doesn't go for you.
And, you know, and all of these things. And sometimes, you know, I think in today's world, you know, there is a sense of entitlement
in
our kids. And you know, I find that now in our new, you know, recruiting young kids that the table has turned and everyone's entitled and they're sort of interviewing me more than me interviewing them and what I can do for them and how I'm going to help their careers and those sort of things. So it's a challenge and coaching is one, but yeah, you know, I'm still a massive proponent for kids playing team sports.
Well, kind of brings everything back to basics, right? You know, you have to turn up on time.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have a clean kit. You have to be presentable. You got to all those things. It just strips it back to the most basic life skills, you know, that help you later in life.
You have to get on with your teammates. You don't necessarily have to like your teammates, but that's even more important is when you don't like a teammate, but you still have to function in a unit together to achieve common goals. And it's so important. You know, we had a discussion in our high performance show tonight actually about whether the team needs to be like just a group of we, as in there's no I in team, you know, we're just all part of this team, we're all we, or whether it's actually a group of highly functioning highly talented individuals that can function well as a team. And Bill Tate, my co-host, talked about a British SAS officer who said, we don't want teammates in our group. We want highly functioning, highly skilled individuals who are very good at their job, who can function in a team environment. There's a real difference there, I think. And I think that when kids go to clubs, I think it's just so important that they are nurtured as an individual, because every individual is different, right? They are treated as an individual, but in a team situation, rather than, okay, well, you're all the same, we're all in this together, let's go and do it all together. But no, it's got to be, okay, little Johnny, your strengths are this, let's focus on this, let's do this, you know, and then let's get you working with little Peter over here, because he can sort of complement you, and you can, you know, I think it's important that yeah, you get that individuality, because sometimes I think when we talk about team sports, we kind of lose the individuality of the person.
Yeah.
I think that's a really important job of the coach, to make sure that every kid is treated as an individual.
Yeah, look, that I completely agree. I think I'm going to take it one extra step. I think the maturity of the individual, I think the quicker, and it's really hard for I spend a lot of time in junior football, so it's really hard for kids to recognise the fact. But as you get older and your emotional intelligence starts to kick in and you sort of understand your surroundings, I think the quicker someone understands, yeah, we've all got our jobs to do, and I've got a role to play in my team, but I'm going to be a better individual if the 10 individuals around me are at their best or are better. That I'm going to get more out of it as an individual, rather than concentrating on me and what I'm doing. And I'm going to get, if I can lift two or three around me, I'm going to be better individually, right? Yeah. And that's one of the key things. You can get high performing individuals all focusing individually, and if you add them all together, the aggregate's going to be a great outcome.
Yeah.
But there's still elements of that emotional intelligence that knows that the guy next to you, or the guy behind you, or in front of you, he needs to be, the more up he is or she is, the better off you're going to be a better player because of it. So part of your role is to make sure that they're operating at their optimum level and they might have an off day. Right?
Their role will be the same.
Absolutely.
To help you be the best player you can be.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And that's an ideal team. There it is there.
Yep. I've also got a problem with football club canteens.
Specifically Geelong Rangers.
No, not just not
how many football club canteens have you been to?
Well, a lot, hundreds, I'd say, over the course of my playing career.
What, and the food being provided at these canteens?
Yeah, poor. What's wrong with it? Like, as a person who comes from a health and fitness background in my professional life, to go to
protein balls.
To go not necessarily protein balls, but to go to
superfood.
To go to a football club, and the whole premise of going to a football club is to be healthy and fit, and run around and build up your cardiovascular fitness and your strength and all these sorts of things. And then you go to the canteen.
Chips and hot dogs. Yeah,
all you can buy is chips and hot dogs and cans of Coke. And you see kids running around with milkshakes and Coke and ice cream and whatever. And I look at it and I think to myself, have those things. Like, I've got no problem with those things being sold, but maybe have some healthy options as well.
Yeah, like protein balls, which we have
introduced.
Salad cups, fruit cups.
Do they sell? Is this the problem? They do good.
Funny story before, I know Tim's dying to jump in, so just hold that thought, Tim, if you can. It might take 30 seconds, so just stick your fingers in your ears and it'll stay in there. I bought a superfood salad at number 19, a bit of a plug for no one, I don't even know them, Escovale Road.
Beautiful cafe.
Yep, $13 superfood. You know, some leaves, some shredded apple, some avocado, really beautiful.
Lovely.
Some nuts. in a little thing. And I took it down to the club, and we've got a little display fridge there. We can put some things in there, which we do, including the Nutella donuts and some other
high-selling items.
Yeah. And cannoli, beautiful ricotta cream cannoli. You know, so some less healthy options, but we've got the healthy options. So I put it in there, and I said to the ladies behind the canteen, I said, guys, let's just put it in there and let's just see how many people are asking for it. Like, there was only one.
Yep.
But, you know, sorry, it's not for sale, but add up how many people would...
We'll buy some.
10 minutes later, I'm setting up corner flags on one of the grounds, and as I'm walking down the side...
That's an absolute lie, because you'd never be setting up corner flags, but go on.
100%.
You're watching one of your volunteers set up corner flags.
Yeah, and there's Dr. Mike, one of our parents, standing on the sidelines waiting for the game to start, hoeing into with a plastic fork my superfood salad, which I'd bought for $13, put it in there on display, and asked the girl specifically...
Don't sell it.
Yeah, just, you know, if people are asking for it, just count how many people would ask for it so we can work out whether it's,
is it viable?
If we did 20 of them, whether we'd sell 20 or be left with 18 left over and having to throw them out. Not throw them out, but... and I said, oh, Mike, what's happening? He goes, oh, mate, only cost me $5. Unbelievable.
Well, no wonder it sold.
But this is a question for you, Cactus. What is the, after young Johnny's finished his game of football, what's the ideal thing for him to be eating? Because I've heard many varying things in my career, you know, from players, you know, after a game being told, hoe into your pizza and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. That's an English Premier League level.
Professional athlete.
Yeah. What is the best thing for a kid to refuel himself, one, for his next day at school, and two, just to get himself back up and firing?
So the best, so assuming that they're training at night time and that dinner comes afterwards, then just a nice balanced dinner. So some good quality carbohydrates, might be rice or pasta or whatever it is, a nice protein source, meat, or if, you know, vegetarian perhaps, you know, beans and tofu and quinoa, that sort of thing. And lots of vegetables, lots and lots of vegetables. I mean, it's just a good balanced meal. But
not a balanced meal if there's no chips. How's that balanced?
When you take your kids to sport or to school and it's tuck shop day or whatever it is, and you fill them up with poor quality food, then that's what you start to normalize, right? I'm going to play sport. After sport, I get to hoe into anything I really want to, and it's all of a sudden it's normalized that is what you should be eating after you play sport or on canteen day or whatever it might be. Now, I give my kid treats just like anyone, but
Bet you're not like anyone.
But not, certainly not every day. And, you know, we went to, for example, I went to my club, Geelong Rangers, and we went in on a Thursday night after training, and they have meals after training, which is really nice. All the kids, a lot of the kids stick around, the parents. But the kids' options were not ideal. It was chips and nuggets and those pizzas that you know.
Yeah. Sounds pretty good to me.
Delicious, no doubt about it. So I bought my son an adult meal because it was a nice piece of meat and salad. And I find this when I go to restaurants as well. Why are the adults offered healthy meals
and the kids'
menu is nuggets and fish and chips? Crap food. Yep. So I just think that if I could just send a message out to the clubs out there, Have the treat options, of course. You know, kids love treats, but have some healthy options as well. Have some healthy options.
No doubt.
That's my rant over. We are going to take a break now, and after the break, we're going to wrap up the Clubland program here on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Clubland with Chris Appleford, Morris Bassetto and Tim Payton on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back to Clubland here on FNR Football Nation Radio. That is the end of the show today. Fantastic show, Mo. Did you enjoy that one?
Whirlwind. absolutely started with Bozza
and
didn't stop for the rest of the show. It was just like a
whirlwind. It was great. Thank you very much for being on the program. Mo, same for you. Tim, welcome back.
Thank you, mate. It's good to be back.
Yeah,
is this just a one-week thing?
No, I'm
permanent.
Back. Permanent.
You're back.
Permanent fixture. As long as you're in the studio, mate.
Have you got a baby due in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, we'll work around
we'll
that.
We'll see how permanent that is.
We'll work around that.
She could come here.
Yeah, we'll just bring the baby in. It's all good.
Yeah, bring pre-baby. Like, if she's ready to go,
we'll bring her in.
Maybe bring her in.
Do you know it's a boy or a girl?
It's a boy.
We'll have a doctor.
You got a name?
On standby.
Is it named?
It isn't named yet. Yeah, it is named, but I can't give.
You're not allowed.
Not allowed to. That's fair enough.
But it's a boy.
It is a boy.
Brilliant. Is this your first?
It's my first.
Wow.
It's my first.
Unbelievable.
A child with a child. Unbelievable.
The man child is having a child. Hey, thank you very much to Mark Bosnich for being a part of the program tonight. Really appreciate him giving his time right before going on Bill and Boz this evening. And then Jason Charles, the Football Federation Victoria Participation Manager, came on to talk about the Club Ambassadors program down there. If you are a club and you have identified some areas that you need help with but you don't know where to turn, or even if you just want someone to come in and look at your club from a completely fresh set of eyes and maybe give you some advice, they are the people who can come in and give you the advice you need and take your club to the next level.
Why is he chortling?
I don't know. Why is he laughing over there?
I don't know.
Oh, because they're going to come in and tell me how shit our ground is. That's why. I already know. All right. Make sure you join
us. Nice one, Einstein.
Yeah, nice one. Make sure you join us here on the Clubland program every Wednesday evening from 8 until 9 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Until then, bye for now.
Clubland with Chris Appleford, Maurice Bassetto and Tim Payton on FNR, Football Nation Radio.